Hi everyone, and good to have you here. Welcome to the first episode, the pilot episode of Dance Nerd. Right now, hosting straightforward from my own home in Jakarta at 5 July 2020 at 6 a.m. The sky is already bright. It's actually my third take on this episode because I'm still learning on how to do this. Bear with me. There's a lot of, unpleasant audio coming out, but I'm very happy to have you here listening to me, if there were, or you might be my friend. Hello there, friends, and I guess welcome, and I hope you guys are in a very awesome and very amazing position, situations and conditions in your life, and just loving your way through it, and just wishing you guys the best. Alright, so basically this is the first episode. I really wanted to just get right into it. Dance Nerd is essentially a channel that I make to talk about the theory, the history, the amazing world of dance, more than what it is that we know in the public, which I always found interestingly very different than, what people that really, there's a lot of misperceptions inside of it, and I really want to change that and hopefully make the world of performing arts, especially dances that are just less mainstream than what popular right now, to be understood more, and hopefully, you guys might think it's interesting and might learn to want to try it, I will say, which is very good. Okay. So the first dance that I really wanted to talk about came in from the Western world. It came in the 14th, 15th century. It's a Western culture. It came from Italia or France, debatable, but it have a very many styles. It's very famous for being princesses, fluffies, and all of that stuff. Do you have any idea what it is about? It's obvious, I think people already know it. It's just ballet, right? Ballet, yay! Oh my god, ballet, right? It's a very interesting topic. Personally for me, it's because I learned it when I grew up. Not for long though, for a while. But at least it was the one who introduced me to a lot of other dances, like waltz, contemporary, modern. And a lot of the techniques that I found inside of the ballet dance actually are kind of like the foundation of a lot of the other dance. Most other dance, but not all, I would say. But yeah, so that's basically my own personal motivations. I'm not saying I'm an expert and might be, less updated about what's happening in the ballet world right now, since I haven't really touched on it so much. Or practice it so much in a recent year, almost a decade, I would say. But I really would love to. I'm still quite involved as an audience, as a person who enjoy it, who like to see it, and I still found a lot of the things inside of the ballet world hasn't really changed that much. So I hope, correct me if I'm wrong, but I hope you guys will find it quite insightful whenever you found something new about this. So let's get into it. So ballet, assuming you haven't really heard of it, which I highly doubt, but just really wanted to make the perceptions align between you and I about what ballet is. Ballet is not only to-do, guys. It's not only point shoes, although it's very predominant and what, a lot of the ballet dance kid always talk about. But ballet is essentially it's a performing arts. It's a performing arts more than just its dance. It involves a lot of choreography, music, which is, obviously classical music. There's a lot of elaborate costumes, staging, lighting, and there's a lot of styles inside of it. More than what you only know, which I assume classical style, which is swan leg and a nutcracker. So just a quick tap in towards what how it came to be, the history of it. Ballet came from you know, obviously the Western country. It started with one guy, you know. So this king, called King Louis the 14th, he essentially wanted to show off to his friend what his amazing costume that he made, or not, but it's called Apollo. And essentially what he do, I would assume, is just kind of like a fashion show, which is, you know, towards his all other noble friends about what, how, you know, how it's actually very impressive, you know, that he have, that able to make him move very, very freely. So that's, I think, is how it all started, that this one guy that really wanted to show off. So thanks, King Louis, for your, you know, for your intentions at the very beginning, because turning out, people love it. People like it so much that it somehow spread to all other European countries, and even to Russia, Denmark, Italy, Russia, and everyone adopted their own style inside of it. One of the most famous dancers, you know, back in the 1830s, it's called Sergei, you know, Sergei Dahilev, if I'm not wrong, and did not pronounce it wrong. But the one that I think most people, at least my age or everyone else, would know is just those who came from the 20th centuries, which I'm fangirling when I was a kid, called, you know, top dancer like Margot Fonteyn, Rudolf Nureyev, and Anna Pavlova, Natalia Makarova, all those amazing dancer who just kind of like shaped the 20th centuries after the First World War. But, you know, this is all about how dance came to be, right? But how is, you know, the style that I just mentioned, is there so many different styles inside of ballet? Well, obviously, yeah. The one that is very, very, very dominant and people know is just basically the classical ballet. Essentially what it is just, you know, it came first. It was first adopted. So the productions or the franchise that everyone knew, obviously, is Swan Lake, The Sleeping Beauty, The Nutcracker, all of those things. It always have a prince, it's always have a princess, it's always have a king, a kingdom, because it came from, you know, it came from the kingdom itself. It came from King Louis and their noble friend. It's basically, essentially, you know, them making a fan fiction. I'm sorry, it's not fan fiction. It's them making stories about how you know, their life is, you know, and added a little bit of fantasy inside of it as well. At least that's how I think about it in the very beginning. But the next one is the Romantic Ballet, which is the second popular one. It's just, it exists when the female dancers are more, you know, dominant, you know. So there's a lot of tutus, there's a lot of softness, delicate, and kind of like ecstatic experience. And I would say most of it involve a lot of, you know, fantasy, as in ghosts and spirit women and all of that. So what happened is, one of the biggest franchises for, let me just give you an example, right? So the biggest franchise is called Giselle. Now Giselle is a very, you know, creepy, spooky, and tragic, and romantic story of one girl who in love with this nobleman called Albrecht, and essentially dies of a heartbreak because Albrecht, those deceitful and filthiest man, kind of like flirt with other women, and essentially Albrecht, well, correct me if I, you know, spell it wrong, I pronounce it wrong. So Albrecht is just kind of like facing, you know, this kind of like consequences, and just of his careless seductions, and kind of like Giselle kind of like being cursed by the Wheelie. So Wheelie is kind of like a ghost of this heartbroken woman. Giselle, who had died and become a Wheelie, essentially at first really wanted Albrecht to suffer, but then because of her love, kind of like save Albrecht and essentially from the Wheelies, and just, you know, and kind of like those kind of like heartless, you know, not heartless, I mean kind of like tragic love in all of that. So there's a lot of those common theme, even Coppelia and La Sylphide. As in goes, I mean, not all of it is a tragic story, but you will find little common things about them. Now, the third one is neoclassical ballet, which I don't think has been quite popular in the Asian country, at least in my country, which is Indonesia. It's something that an adaptation of. There's no clear plot, guys. There's no clear costume. The costume of the dancer is just, sometimes it's pretty flat. You discuss or you dance about an abstract topics. One of my most favorite one, to be honest, of this style, which for me rang almost first, is George Balanchine's franchise known as Jewel. So in that dance, essentially, the dancers pretended to be the jewel. So there's diamond, rubies, and emerald. And everyone kind of like dance in accordance to the jewelry that they represent. And I love it. Because it kind of like explain, I don't know. If diamond could dance, I will say that's particularly it. And I love the adoptions of rubies and emerald. Where you know, they have this kind of like mood and subjects and intense music. More than just, you know, those classical thing where everything has to be delighted. Most of the people in the ballet world will really agree with me when basically in the dance or ballet dance, you have to make it as effortlessly as possible. So kind of like a swan, right? So in the top is really beautiful, and at the bottom is just like you work really hard, but you should not show it to people. But I found that to be unappealing, you know, because it makes you not human, and I guess that's essentially their purpose in the romantic and classical ballet, because you essentially kind of like pretended to be a swan, pretended to be this beautiful ghost who was, you know, heartbroken and all of that thing. But you get the idea. Now, the fourth one, which is the newest one among all of it, is just the contemporary ballet. Now, the contemporary ballet, I will say, you know, it's another adaptation of neoclassical. Argumentatively, George Balanchine might start this one as well. But it involves mime. It involves acting. It involves sometimes music that are not classical. It involves sometimes adaptations of other dance. Instead of being completely on its own worlds, I guess the contemporary ballet adopt another technique, example from traditional dance, from African dance, or you know, from traditional dance. So there's a lot of things that people can do in this kind of space, where it's less restrictive, and you can essentially talk a lot more and make a lot of franchise based on what happened now, what happened today. It's more free and it's more lyrical. Sometimes it's just not pretty and all of that. It's a people, I will say, my friend who love the classical and romantic ballet doesn't really are a big fan of the contemporary ballet one. But at the very least, for me, it's just something that a very good progress in the ballet world, you know, to try to do new things. So that's basically essentially it on ballet. So you guys no, right? There's a lot of things involving in the ballet world. And all that I just mentioned is just style. There's another one called techniques that, you know, different kind of school have different kinds of techniques. The Russian one, for example, is very, very popular of Faganova method, who came from the Russian ballet dancer called Agrippina Faganova. And French have those. Either one, if you talk to a dancer, you will essentially know that they have different syllabus. So the most popular one, I will say, is the Royal Academy dance one. And this actually involved to how the ballet industry works. So how the ballet industry works, right? So how does ballet is being produced? The essence of actually doing ballet productions is actually making or doing the ballet franchise or making a new franchise, right? I will say making a new franchise is really hard for companies or a theater that is not predominantly known, but for you know, for leading theater, leading school like New York City Ballet, they are very famous to actually make a lot of new franchises, especially after, you know, it is developed by George Balanchine, who essentially make a new kind of styles, right? But those things are very interesting. But if you came from like a less popular countries, you well not country, less popular school, it's very I didn't found a lot of new things came up. Most of the time, they just do classical romantic ballet. And there's Swan Lake again and Nutcracker again. And I can see why people are very, very bored when you kept on doing this kind of thing. And that's the part where I think it's just the same, whether, you know, a decade before this and in 2010s to 2020. And essentially, that's where I wanted to change the perceptions, where essentially, I think in the world of ballet, it's not only the dancer who is, you know, who is the core. You have the productions, you have the choreographer, you have the musicians, you have the production stage, and every one of that have its own role. And I will say that in order to further develop it, you really need to actually dig down more than just the ballet dancer itself. Now, I found that if you look into, you know, the economy behind, you know, ballet, I think it's not really a surprise that ballet isn't really a well-paid job, even in America, I would say. I mean, it's stated that it's about $15 per hour, and that's in America. Just compare that to other country. You will find a lot of dancers do a lot of part-time jobs, or work as a teacher, or work in other kind of styles. So it's not really good outlook, guys, on being a dancer in the current industry, unless, I would say, argumentatively, if you're a leader and you wanted to actually pursue something more and develop the industry more. And I will give you a bit of example of what has been done to, I think, some of the amazing dancers that adapted to this whole things. And I guess how they changes into it. But a lot of this, you know, competitiveness, a lot of supply but not a lot of demands, make a lot of competitive and just unhealthy cutthroat environment. And because of that, you will see a lot of teenage girl or ballet dancer who you have like a stress fracture, who have like a bad eating disorder, a bad mental health, and just, you know, they are very scope, you know, they're very robotic, as in completely just dancing not as a hobby. And that for me is just not good, guys, not good. But at least that was in the past. I'm sure today is just, there's a progress going on, hopefully, on all of that part. But yeah, that's how it is. Actually, there's a lot of things I still can be changed, other than just, you know, the toxic environment of being a dancer itself, but also about the cultural issues. A lot of people might think that a lot of this old franchise or dancer is just anti-woman and ages, because it's so old, it's not updated, it's not how it is today. You always kind of like objectified a woman, or kind of like making this, you know, very unrealistic things of women in the franchise, and not respecting that. It's debatable. I'm not going to put a lot of topics in that, but let me know if you're interested in all of those things. But so basically, that's all the introduction. So what I came in next is relatable to the second subtopics that I really wanted to talk about, is actually essentially a ballet company and how ballet is being produced and how ballet dancers get money. Essentially, how do they do that? How do, you know, the kind of production? Now, I did became a dancer when I was a kid. I did get paid at a very young age and get paid for being a dance, to do dance. But I never actually joined a ballet company. To my defense, there isn't a ballet company in the past, at least in Indonesia. But I get right now there's a ballet company in Indonesia. There's a huge association called Ballet.id, who kind of like partnering a lot with other like Australian embassies I saw, and also other you know, opera companies outside of Indonesia, and I think that's super cool. And if any one of you could introduce me to those people, I think I would really love it. But the way that I really know that, I think it still haven't really changed, at least after a quick quick look and research. I mean, if you guys, you know, work in a ballet company and might want to talk more about this, let me know. But at least the way that I really know is just in the past, this ballet company essentially is it's a dance troupe, right? So they give dancer the managerial, the support staff. They're essentially a company that employed dancer to dance. But what they do is kind of like helping the choreographer or the dance director kind of like produce every season and kind of like do the marketing stuff behind. Whenever there's a season, they market stuff, they work with the opera. And essentially, you know, do all of that. But you all kept surprised that there's a lot of lost in the box office of the dance world. So they're really highly dependent on external financial support. And that's where the government subsidies and private donation come in. I wouldn't go into debate about how that works. In essence, some government do support artistic world and want to preserve, you know, and dance kind of like apply for a grant and fit in that budget. But for the private donation, essentially, it's just you pitching your season, pitching your dancers to high network individual, essentially. That's just how it is. And I will even argue that in the past, I don't know, not right now, but in the past, in North America, private donation is like the main source of funding. At least that's how I heard from my friend. And that's just how essentially it. I will say the only one who is not positive is just this, the dance school, because here's how it worked. At least that's how I know. If you want to become a dancer, you go to a dance school, right? And then essentially you pay for that dance school and try to go up and become a better dancer every year up into a professional level. And every season, you have this chance to actually perform in a stage. So essentially, you won't get paid when you dance in a stage, because essentially that became your portfolio. The only way you can get money is basically if you won a competition, if you get hired by external parties, which happens a lot, like invited to a wedding, invited to as a backup dancer in other in TVs and stuff like that. So that's basically how it happens, you know. One thing that you really need to know is essentially the way they structure it is kind of the same way as a normal school. So if you go to the school, you graduated with a syllabus and it became your resume, where you are going to audition towards this company now. But the difference is, I don't think resume really matters a lot, because when you do auditions, they're just gonna, you know, resume and having those syllabus will really, really help you, because it shaped you as a dancer over the year. But even if you don't have those syllabus, you do still can auditions in the ballet company, even though maybe your chances are more smaller in comparison to dancer who have trained for literally decades to do that. But if you can do it, you still can become a dancer in all of that stuff. So I would think that the head of ballet company, usually what we know as an artistic director, will come in and select people. Sometimes it's just not the artistic director. Sometimes it's just the ballet masters or mistress, which is essentially the one who is responsible to be coach, might come in and recruit them. Sometimes the choreographer might come in. But essentially, they are the one who gonna judge your dance. But the one thing that I think people don't know is essentially when you auditions towards a company, at least the way that I learned it and my friend told me, is just they're not only gonna judge you based on your technical skill, but they do gonna judge you based on your overall, you know, skill. It's really different than a competition, and they will judge you based on kind of like your fitness towards the company. For example, I think it's just fair, right? Because if you wanted to make a season, for example, the Nutcracker, and you wanted to have a girl who you know, essentially are petite, not tall. But in exchange, if you wanted to make a franchise of jewels, where the ruby dancers, you know, ruby soloists usually are very, very tall. What happened then is obviously you want to recruit a taller dancers in compared to a shorter dancers, because it fit the role more. And that happens, I think, in a lot of ways towards recruitment process. I found that at least in the past. I don't know how it happens now, but I know that at least in some countries you could not hire people indiscriminately like that. But I think it is part of the consideration. It's very different than competitions where they don't really care where you came from, and they are going to judge you based on your technical skill, based your performance, based your expressions, and all of that. And I think people have to approach it in a very different way, and all of that. So, what happened next? You came in, you got accepted toward the company. There's gonna be at least a grade or at least a career path. Now, the biggest, the highest one obviously is the principal, right? Principal is actually the one that's gonna get the role, the main role, like an actor, kind of like the main role, main lead in a lot of things. For example, if it's a Giselle, you're gonna be the Giselle one. If it's the Sleeping Beauty, you're gonna be Aurora in all of that one. So that's kind of like, because in order to become principal, you have a lot of these years, you have to be in the company for how long, you have like the best technical skills among your peers, in comparison to junior dancer who just dance literally lesser and become just a corpse to ballet and all of that one. And then of course the lower, there's some companies that have lower taking trainees and apprenticeships, and I don't know how they were paid and in all of that one, but at the very least if you became a corps de ballet essentially, or junior dancers, you still get paid, and that's basically how it is. A bigger term is prima ballerina, which is essentially, you know, the top female dancer, but essentially it has stopped this practice, and that's just essentially how it is. You need to understand, the biggest ballet company in the world, called Even Bolshoi Ballet, will typically only employs like 200 to 300 in dancers, right? And some in the Western world is just gonna hire 100. So you gotta imagine if there's a thousands of dancers who's gonna audition it, it become 1 to 10. It's very, very highly competitive to be able to be a dancer in the large ballet company. So I will say it's really, really hard to get hired in a ballet world in comparison to, you know, basically all the other career path performing outside. I'm gonna discuss in a later episode essentially. The other one, obviously, the one that I would really, really love is just kind of like the adoptions of classical ballet in Asian country. One of the most popular one in Indonesia is called the Ramaya Hindu Ballet, which essentially is a classical style of dance performing arts in Indonesia that adopted towards like the Hinduism and Ramayana culture. They always perform in Prambanan, and it's really, really beautiful, and it's nothing like ballet at all, at least the ballet that we know. And it's just it's an adoption of our traditions towards the company, and it's really beautiful. On the other hand, there's also the Royal Ballet of Cambodia, where essentially it's also quite the same. It's adoptions of Eastern culture in all of that. You will be surprised, there's a lot of Asian Asian dancers in South Korea alone. There's 3, there's Taiwan, there's 4, if I'm not wrong, I think more. Japan are the most popular, I will say. There's so much academy, there's so much company. There's the most popular one, I will say, the new the national the Tokyo City Ballet, if I'm not wrong. But you know, they have, I will say, a really different one in comparison to all the other things that we all know. So that's essentially it. the company rules. That's how it was being produced. So, sorry, the company and the organizational structure. So how is ballet is going to be produced, right? So what happened is essentially a choreographer and the assistant director will make a season of program. If I'm not wrong, correct me if I'm wrong, but the way that they do it, at least in my ballet academy in the past, is the sponsor will basically tell them, like, they saw the strand of what sponsor really want to like, right? And then essentially they try to make a topic that sponsor would like, investor would like, and this is why typically they decided to just do nutcrackers. They typically do Swan Lake because that's basically what people like, because they're very popular. So they don't really want to expose themselves to a lot of other things that is not really, you know, sponsor wouldn't like. So they make this season, right? And then of course there's also artistic input, where essentially the artistic director, the head of the company, will then came in and said, hey, I have an idea, I have an inspiration, so I'm actually doing this. And for example, there's this productions that I do called Annie, the Annie movie of in US, right? The Annie movie. And so there's one season where essentially I have an Annie franchise on, and then after that, the choreographer, which is basically the oldest dancer in all of them, who have the biggest experience and the biggest way, so they start to make the choreograph for about 1 to 2 weeks. After that, essentially, during these 1 to 2 weeks, dancer usually still dance only and not do a lot of things other than just honing their technical skill as usual. And then after that, they start to learn about this dance. They learn about this dance, they do ABC for about a month to 3 months long. And parallel to this, usually the school or a company will then hire a theater to actually kind of like make a mark theater rent a theater to host this thing. And then there's also fundraising on actually kind of like how to get the money to buy a costume. And then they hire a costume designer, and then they also basically, so there's a lot of things in the background where it happens. Most of the time I know it, they don't do a lot of marketings, to be fair, because they don't have the budget for it. But if they do, essentially it's where, you know, sponsor came in and they do the marketing projects for them. So that's how it is. After 3 months, everyone is ready. We got the costume for 1 week, and then we do kind of like trials. I forgot in English it's called gladiro secure. And then there's a clean one where essentially it's almost ready, and the first dry one, where essentially you dry run through for everything. And essentially you still can have a lot of mistake. So you do this like once or twice, and then after that you're ready. You dance for 2 or 3 hours. And then the money usually came in from the audience, or you know, essentially it's a free program where it's just a portfolio program, and all the money comes from fundraising. But if it's a ticket, then essentially what you do is just kind of like bought the ticket online or offline. In the past it's mostly offline. And then you got the productions, and then yeah, that's it. You go home, and that's essentially it. That's how production work, and there's a lot of thing in the background that dancers really don't know, and people don't highlight, like how you do the lighting, how you hire vendors for all of this thing. It's really really fun, to be honest, to know all of that. So there's also about productions of brochures. There's also MCs. And I really actually enjoy seeing the behind the scenes, and that's how we highlight all the dances. So if the dancer doesn't suck, so. But yeah, that's essentially it. There's nothing much going on, I will say, in the dance world, other than what is being done. Technically, you can see a lot of movies about dancing world, but you'll be surprised, there's not a lot of people who know behind the scenes of what dance really is. And I found that quite a shame because to highlight this, there's a lot of things that works are being done and it pushes a lot of the productions. If we can basically market to a lot more people, we can basically gain more money, we can gain more revenue, we can basically make things more popular, and we can less rely on investors or donors to do all of this one. And essentially adopt it to people. Because essentially what it is, dance is an art, no? So you have to basically, it's for the people. And what I really found is just that the dance world usually are heavily involved in just technical skills. They've forgotten that it's supposed to be an enjoyable process for everyone, where everyone had fun, and including making people kind of like, you know, delivering a message as an artist towards the audience and make the audience inspired and all of that. And I found myself, at least my experience before, it's just highly technical, and you became somehow like a robot doing this whole process. But I'm sure that it's just something that might be different in every academy, but at least in my academy in the past was like that. But they are very highly supportive, and it's very local and small school, small production house. So I think there's still a lot of room to learn, but I really, really love the fact that they open up my love towards dance and performing art. It introduced me to waltz, it introduced me to tango, it introduced me to theater, and all of this kind of performing arts that I think is just heavily untapped with a lot of opportunity is just something that I wish more people talk into it. And that's the real reason why I decided to do this. And that's essentially the economical side, at least the business side of the dance world. And now jumping into the conclusion, kind of like what I take over all of this and just how I wanted people to learn more and correct me and tell me and just have a good discussion with you in regards to everything about dance. It's just kind of like, what is your favorite dance that is just unpopular right now that you find it very interesting? Do you want me to discuss in regards to traditional dance and Saman dance that is popular, or and more, you know, based in Indonesia, or everything else? So I guess that's it. So it's been fun. I love to talk more and essentially make you guys feel quite informed and delighted to know more about the world of dance and in the perspective of an Indonesian girl and in the perspective of just someone who in love more towards the theory behind it in comparison to dancing it. I would love to invite other dancers to this podcast in the near future, but that's essentially it. So I hope you guys are having an awesome days ahead, and let me know and reach me out if you have any kind of things that you would like me to discuss, and maybe we can discuss it together as well. That's it. Goodbye. Bye-bye.